perspective. What's really important? A young Roger Morgan came out of the Appalachian Mountains with the sole purpose of making a fortune. Money became his god, and he became worth millions. Then the stock market crash of 1929 and the Great Depression reduced him to poverty. Penniless, he took to the road. One day, a friend found him on the Golden Gate Bridge, staring down into the waters of San Francisco Bay, and he suggested they move on. "Leave me alone," Roger replied. "I'm trying to think. There's something more important than money, but I've forgotten what it is." Well, what Roger Morgan forgot, and perhaps never knew, was God's perspective of money. And that's what we'll explore in this chapter. Solomon, the author of Ecclesiastes, had an income of more than $40 million. He lived in a palace that took 13 years to build. He owned 40,000 stalls of horses. He sat on an ivory throne overlaid with gold. He drank from gold cups. The daily menu of his household included 100 sheep, 30 oxen. I mean, obviously, Solomon was in a position to know whether money would bring him happiness. And in Ecclesiastes 5, verse 10, he didn't hesitate to say, "He who loves money shall never have enough. The foolishness of thinking that wealth brings happiness. The more you have, the more you spend, right up to the limits of your income." In contrast, most people believe that you can buy happiness. A survey found that 70% thought they'd be happier if they could just earn a little bit more. And I periodically side with this majority, falling into the "if only" trap. If only I had a new car, I'd be satisfied. If only I lived in that nice house over there, I'd be content. If only I had a particular job, then I'd be happy. The list is just endless. Well, the Bible offers a very sharp contrast to this attitude. As someone once said, "Money will buy a bed, but not sleep. Books, but not brains. Food, but not an appetite. A house, but not a home. Medicine, but not health. Amusement, but not joy. A crucifix, but not a savior." Now, here's a question that a lot of people ask. Is money evil? And the answer to that is no, it's morally neutral. Money can be used for good, such as supporting missionaries or building hospitals. It can be also used for evil, such as financing illegal drugs and pornography. Listen to 1 Timothy 6, verse 10. "The love of money is a root of all sorts of evil. The Bible doesn't condemn money, only a wrong attitude toward it. Many of the godliest people were among the wealthiest people of the day. Abraham, David, Joseph of Arimathea were all wealthy, and yet they didn't allow it to interfere with their relationship with the Lord." Nevertheless, what we find in Matthew 13, verse 22, we're warned that riches can destroy a spiritually fruitful life. Here's what it says. "The one on whom the seed was sown among the thorns, this is the man who hears the word, and the worry of the world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and it becomes unfruitful." It's also easy for those who have resources to turn away from God. Deuteronomy 31, verse 20 tells us, "For when I, the Lord, bring them into the land flowing with milk and honey, which I swore to their fathers, and they have eaten and are satisfied and become prosperous, then they will turn to other gods and serve them and spurn me and break my covenant." You know, someone once said, for every 99 people who can be poor and remain close to Christ, only one can become wealthy and remain close to him. It just must be human nature to cling to the Lord when it's obvious that only he can provide our needs. But once people become prosperous, they often take the Lord for granted because they no longer think they have as much need for him. Now, let me ask you a question. Do you think godly people will always prosper financially? Well, some Christians embrace one of two extremes. Some say if you're really spiritual, you have to be poor because wealth and a really close relationship with Christ just can't coexist. The other extreme is the belief that Christians who have faith will enjoy uninterrupted financial prosperity. Well, let's examine that first end of the spectrum a little more deeply, the one that teaches that godliness can only occur in an environment of poverty. You know, we've already seen that money is morally neutral. And in the Old Testament, the Lord actually extended the reward of abundance to the Israelites when they were obedient, while the threat of poverty was one of the consequences of disobedience. Deuteronomy 30, verse 15 and 16 tells us, "I have set before you today life and prosperity, and death and adversity, in that I command you today to love the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, and to keep his commandments, that the Lord your God may bless you." And in Psalm 35, 27, it reads, "The Lord delights in the prosperity of his servant." You know, we may pray for prosperity when our relationship with the Lord is healthy. 3 John 2 adds, "Beloved, I pray that in all respects you may prosper and be in good health, just as your soul prospers." So let me emphasize this again. The Bible doesn't say that a godly person must live in poverty. A godly person may have resources. On the other hand, some believe all Christians who truly have faith will always prosper. And this extreme is also an error. Just study the life of Joseph. He's a classic example of a faithful person who experienced both prosperity and poverty. He was born into a prosperous family, and then he was thrown into a pit and sold into slavery by his jealous brothers. There he became a slave in a wealthy Egyptian's home, and his master, Potiphar, promoted Joseph to head of the household. Later, Joseph made the decision not to commit adultery with Potiphar's wife, and because of that decision, he was thrown into prison for years. Then in God's timing, Joseph ultimately was elevated to the position of prime minister of the most powerful country of the world in that time, Egypt. Well, let's examine three reasons why the godly may not prosper. First, they could be violating a biblical principle. You may be giving generously, but acting dishonestly. You may be honest, but not fulfilling your work responsibilities. You may be faithful as an employee, but head over heels in debt. You may be completely out of debt, but not giving. Well, one of the biggest benefits of this book is that we explore what the entire Bible teaches about money. Those who don't understand all the requirements may neglect critical areas of responsibility and suffer financially. The second reason a person may not prosper is that God is simply building our character. An example of the Lord developing character in a people before prospering them is found in Deuteronomy 8, verses 16 through 18. Listen to this. "In the wilderness, he fed you manna which your fathers did not know, that he might humble you, that he might test you to do good for you in the end. Otherwise, you may say in your heart, 'My power and the strength of my hand made me this wealth.' But you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who is giving you the power to make wealth." You know, the Lord knew the children of Israel had to be humbled before they could handle wealth. Our Father knows us better than we know ourselves, and in his infinite wisdom, he knows exactly, and I mean exactly, how much he can entrust to each of us at any one time without harming our relationship with him. The third reason godly people may not prosper is simply the mystery of God's sovereignty. In Hebrews 11, verses 1 through 35, lists people who triumphed miraculously by exercising their faith in the living God. But in verse 36, the writer abruptly directs our attention to godly people who live by faith, gained God's approval, yet experienced poverty. It's the Lord himself who ultimately chooses how much to entrust to each person. And sometimes we simply can't understand or explain his decisions. Well, let's summarize this. The scriptures teach neither the necessity of poverty nor uninterrupted prosperity. What the Bible teaches is the responsibility of you and me being faithful stewards. Now, before we leave the issue of prosperity, it's really important to understand that the Lord's perspective of prosperity is much different than that of our culture. The Lord evaluates true riches based on his spiritual value system, and this is stated most clearly in Revelation 2, verse 9. The godly poor are actually rich in God's sight. Here's what it says. "I, the Lord, know your tribulation and your poverty, but you are rich." Wow. Those who are wealthy yet don't enjoy a close relationship with Christ are actually poor, according to Revelation 3, verse 17. Because you say, I am rich and have become wealthy and have need of nothing, and you do not know that you are wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. True prosperity is measured by how well we know Jesus Christ and by how closely we follow him. So let me ask you a question. Are you rich? Well, sometimes I feel rich and sometimes I don't feel rich. It usually depends upon whom I'm around. You know, most of us define a rich person as someone who has more money than we do. But if we compare our standard of living to all the people who've ever lived or with the rest of the billions of people living on the earth today, the majority of us who live in this nation are rich. I mean, think about this. Half the world lives on $2 or less each day, a quarter of the world on $1 or less each day. You know, the Lord knew that the rich would face serious spiritual danger, so Scripture offers us three instructions for the affluent. 1 Timothy 6, verse 17 says, "Instruct those who are rich in this present world not to be conceited." Let's face it, wealth tends to produce pride. For several years, I drove two vehicles. The first was an old pickup truck that cost $100. It looked like it cost $100. And when I drove that truck to the bank drive-in window to cash a check, I was humble. I knew the cashier was going to double-check the account of the person driving that vehicle to make sure I had sufficient funds to cover that withdrawal. I was patient. And when I received the money, I was so grateful. My other vehicle was a well-preserved secondhand car that was expensive when it was first new. Now, when I drove it to the bank, I appeared to be a different person. I deserved respect. I wasn't as patient when I received the money, and I wasn't nearly as grateful. Wealth stimulates conceit. James 1, verse 9 and 10 says it this way, "But let the brother of humble circumstances glory in his high position. And let the rich man glory in his humiliation, because like flowering grass, he will pass away." The poor should be encouraged as the children of the King of Kings, while the rich are to remain humble because life is short. So if you're affluent, you need the constant reminder to be humble before the Lord and be humble before other people. And also, don't put your trust in your assets. 1 Timothy 6, verse 17 tells us, "Instruct those who are rich not to fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches, but on God." This has been a struggle for me. It's so easy for us to trust in our assets that we've accumulated. It's easy to be fooled into thinking that money supplies our needs, that money offers security. We tend to trust in the seen rather than the invisible living God. And finally, the prosperous are to give generously. Listen to what 1 Timothy 6, verses 18 and 19 tells us. "Instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is life indeed." And as I suggested before, it's so very helpful to determine a maximum amount that you're going to accumulate. And after you've reached that amount, give the rest to build God's kingdom. This chapter really captures how different God's value system is compared to that of the world. Remember, you're wealthy in God's sight if you're close to Christ and following Him in obedience.